Good afternoon. We're going to call to order the Ag Policy Committee this afternoon. We do have some guests in the audience, so we will we'll probably introduce the guests first. I'm going to start with Representative Johnson. He can begin to introduce some of the guests here, and then we'll do that, and then Representative Anderson will have an informational hearing on his bill. So welcome all to the committee, and Representative Johnson, if you will begin, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It's really a distinct honor for me to introduce three young women from Nicola County. And as you can see by their attire, that they represent the dairy industry. And they are Stacy Schugel of rural New Ulm, Megan Struss of Cortland, and Emily Annickstead of St. Peter. And you've heard me talk about the Annickstead dairy farm, where I learned a bit about dairy farming, and Emily's dad and uncle and brothers helped me learn that day. And I also got to see Emily's showcase at the 4-H project at the county fair. So these folks have a short message for you. I would also like to introduce, in the audience is Michelle Schroeder, who is their advisor and just really does a nice job with them. And Michelle actually was a former legislative assistant in the House of Representatives. So it's kind of a homecoming for her as well. So I'll let the young women speak.
Thank you. So welcome to the committee, and when you speak, introduce yourselves, please.
Good afternoon. We'd like to thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself first. All right, I'm Megan Struss. Good afternoon. We'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with your committee today. I am a Nicola County dairy princess. My family milks 85 cows near Cortland, Minnesota. My parents are Paul and Mary Struss, and I'm a senior at New Ulm Public High School, and I'm the sixth generation on my family's dairy farm. Today, we'd like to share with you a bit about our local dairy industry. But first, I'd like to share with you a bit about our state's dairy industry, the largest sector in our state's agriculture industry. Milk is our state's official drink, and it takes only 48 hours for milk to travel from the farm to the store. Our state's dairy farmers fund the checkoff program, allowing us a great opportunity to serve as a goodwill ambassador to promote our industry. Minnesota is home to nearly 4,000 dairy farms, with 36 of them right in Nicola County. Minnesota is the seventh largest milk producing state in the United States. And Minnesota dairy farms generate $1.8 million in milk sales annually. We also have 39 dairy processing plants in our state, providing a variety of jobs. Dairy farms create a ripple effect on economic well-being of our rural communities. When dairy farmers sell a dollar of milk, it generates $3 of economic activity. And for every 9 dairy cows in the dairy farmer's herd, they provide one full-time job in our rural communities. My family alone generates over 9 jobs in our community. Overall, Minnesota dairy industry supports 38,000 jobs in our state, and Minnesota agriculture as a whole supports 340,000 jobs.
Hello, my name is Stacy Schugel, and I'm also from a Nicola County dairy princess. I'm a senior at New Ulm Public High School. My parents are Dan and Sally Schugel, and my family milks about 35 cows outside of Cortland, Minnesota. As Megan said, Nicola County is home to 36 dairy farms. The dairy farms ranges in size from about 30 cows to 3,000 cows. We are proud to represent the hardworking farm families in our county, but we are also proud of the successful dairy farmers we have in our county. Almost half of the dairy farms in our county have young partners involved in the farm that are under the age of 40. The young sons and daughters of our county involved that in their family's dairy operation help make management decisions and plan to be the next generation of family farms. We are fortunate in Nicola County to have the oldest registered herd of Holsteins in the state. Our county has also 3 heifer raising faculties, one dairy farm that includes the teaching faculty of University of Minnesota vet students, complete with dorms, one dairy farm with robotic milkers, and another on the way, one dairy with methane digester, and the newest dairy farm in the county was added last year by three young brothers milking about 60 Holsteins. I would also like to add that we had one Princess K of the Milky Way hail from Nicollet County, and Nicollet County is home to the rural artist Bonnie Moore, who now dairy farming in Glencoe with her family, who is known around the world for her dairy artwork.
Hello, my name is Emily Anniston. I serve as a Nicollet County Dairy Ambassador. My parents are Rolf and Jean Anniston, and my family, along with my Uncle Mike and our employees, milk 200 cows on our dairy farm near St. Peter. Together, we remind consumers that they should have three servings of dairy every day for strong bones and a healthy lifestyle. Milk is more nutrient-dense than any other beverage. It provides 9 essential nutrients and vitamins for our bodies. I encourage you to eat your favorite dairy products every day. Milk, cheese, cottage cheese, yogurt, Greek yogurt, whatever you enjoy, even chocolate milk. We are fortunate that chocolate milk has been reformulated to have less sugar and still provide 9 essential nutrients and vitamins needed for growth and development. In fact, a glass of orange juice contains more sugar than a glass of chocolate milk. As goodwill ambassadors for the dairy industry, we know that 9 out of 10 teenage girls and 6 out of 10 teenage boys do not get enough calcium in their daily diets. Milk is the best source of calcium. That is why it is important for us to continue to share our message of nutritious, wholesome, and healthy dairy products that come from our family farms. Not only does the dairy industry continue to make our state's economy grow and thrive, but it also helps families, adults, and kids be healthy and succeed. We are proud to share the message of the dairy industry to consumers wherever we are. In conclusion, we would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today and to share our message. We would also like to thank Representative Johnson for having us as his guest today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very informative, very well done. Thank you. Are there any questions of these? Yes, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It escapes me right now, the Princess K for this year, her name starts with an M. Anyway, this is terrible because she comes from my district. I've been on her farm. Anyway, but I was able to watch you girls being carved out of butter. Do you still have the carvings in your freezer?
We are not finalists for the Princess K, but me and Megan, since we are Dairy Princess this summer, we can have the opportunity, if we want to become Dairy Princess, but I'm not going to, just because it doesn't really work out with my schedule, but next year I will definitely, for sure.
I think the current Princess K's name is Margena. Mm-hmm.
Margena, it is.
Yeah. Yes.
I knew it was an unusual name, and that's why I was. Yeah. I knew it was M, but I couldn't.
Was it last year we had it? Well, two years ago, we had a girl who was one of the finalists, and what we did with one of the girls was she did a bake. We made cookies from her butterhead sculpture, and we sent it to soldiers overseas. So we did around Christmas time with her.
Some people
do like corn feeds like that. And they do with her like a giant corn on the cob fest, and they use butter from that too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you could fill me in on that.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask you, do you sell any of your milk directly off the farm? Any of you?
We do not.
Anyone?
Our milk goes directly to AMPI in New Ulm.
Okay. I know you have quite a few dairy farms. It's unusual in my district. But I know that there's quite a few down in Nicollet. Okay, thank you. And congratulations. It's wonderful to see all of you girls, and good job on promoting milk.
Yes. Representative Nornes?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention one thing that a number of years ago when I had the radio station, I was looking for an employee, news director specifically, and just by chance she happened to be a former Princess K of the Milky Way. Her name was Katie Scott. Hmm. And great employee, and the thing about that program, speaking of her specifically, she came from a family where nobody talked to each other. It's quietest, just very, you know, it was on. And so here's this quiet young lady that comes through the program, and she is now representing Lake Region Healthcare as a public relations person. So, I mean, it really did a lot for her personally, and it helped me professionally to have someone like her on staff. So I just put that in for what it's worth.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. Very good. Yes, Representative Dill has a question.
Well, Chair Poppe, remind me, I think that former Speaker of the House Kelleher was a dairy princess.
I believe perhaps even from Nicollet County.
Yeah, from Nicollet County, Margaret Kelleher. You know who that is?
Margaret.
Anderson
Kelleher, right. Margaret Anderson at that time.
Madam Chair, yeah, Margaret Anderson. I just, since her name's come up, I just want to share a fun fact. And I taught at West High School when Margaret Anderson was a high school student there. And she was involved in the Youth and Government Program, and I was an advisor. And that's when I got to know Margaret Anderson and you know, learned to, I saw the potential, folks. You could see it early. Just as we can see the potential with these three young women. And I think they symbolize for us a lot. They're a nice reminder. Looking in the future, I'm positive. We've got a lot of great young people and doing exciting things, and thanks for all that you do to build our future into Minnesota. You're doing well. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you, Representative Johnson. Thank you very much for coming. So we appreciate it. It is Minnesota Agriculture Week, and we we're glad to recognize the dairy ambassadors, but we also have FFA members who will come down and be able to do a brief presentation. And while they're coming down, Representative Fitzsimmons yesterday was a host to a wonderful sandwich meal. That was excellent. Thank you. I hope many of you were able to get down there because it was just very tasty. And Representative Fitzsimmons, since I'm putting you on the spot, would you care to move the minutes from the March 26th meeting?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from the March 26th meeting.
Thank you very much. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Fitzsimmons.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and everyone who was able to make it. Hope you enjoyed lunch, and my parents have been catering for years, and they've been trying to retire, I think, for about 5 years now, but they somehow get drugged back into it, but they still do a few special events like this, and really appreciated everybody coming down.
It was excellent. Thank you. And welcome to the committee. We have a couple of FFA blue jacket wearers, so we're excited to have you here. So if you'll introduce yourselves for the record and go ahead with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Poppe. I'm Brooke Wente. I'm originally from Morris, Minnesota, and right now I'm a student at the University of Minnesota.
And I'm Mallory Pagel. I'm originally from Fulda, Minnesota, and I'm also a student at the University of Minnesota.
So I'm sure many of you have recognized that there's a lot of blue jackets flooding the Capitol today, as it is FFA Day at the Capitol, and in which happens to fall under National Agriculture Week. So there's roughly around 250 members here meeting with their legislators from the different districts all across Minnesota, just sharing a little bit about their story, about how FFA has impacted their lives and how agriculture plays a significant role in their homes and in their communities, and how agriculture education is helping to shape their future.
And this year, we actually reached a milestone with our membership. We hit 10,000 members, a number we haven't seen since the 80s. So that's a really great accomplishment that we're very proud of. Also this year, our theme that we state officers came up with is Fuel Your Fire. And we really think it applies to members and their experiences in FFA, because everything that they're doing in FFA now, whether it's leadership-based or service-based or agricultural-related, it all benefits for their future and will all be very helpful. Like just today, as they're coming here to the Capitol and meeting with you legislators, it really helps them to know that they can be a part of their government system and be really involved as in the future, that they can do that. So the experiences they have now really fuel their future, and that's what we really wanted to focus on in our theme. And our theme is actually going to be portrayed at our convention that is coming up on April 27th through the 29th at the University of Minnesota campus, which you are all invited to attend. It's a celebration of our year's events, and kind of with all the members coming together, getting to compete, getting awarded for all they've done this year, and getting recognized for everything they've done. run. And so it's a really great experience as you see the members and the jackets flood once again on the University of Minnesota campus with that unity and just the spirit of agriculture and FFA and agricultural education. So you're all invited to come and see what that's all about because it's a really great experience. But I just want to thank you for allowing us this opportunity to speak with you today, and we're welcome for any questions that you have for us.
All right. Do we have any questions? We very much, yes, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How long, what's the age limit on, I know you are college kids, most of the ones I talked to today I think were high school kids. How long do you stay in the program?
Good question.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Roughly, most members will join at eighth grade, and then they will their membership will be active until 12th grade. But technically, you can be an FFA member 4 years out of high school. Those typically aren't active memberships, but they are still participating in national events, such as you might have heard of proficiencies, which are applications that members fill out that highlight jobs that they have back at home. And so members can fill out those proficiency applications after their years in high school. So you technically can be an FFA member until 4 years out of high school.
And just to note that Mallory is the president, the state FFA president, and Brooke is the state FFA secretary. So they're actually state officers. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I visited with Brooke before at some meetings in Wilmer and really enjoyed visiting with you. So thank you both for coming today. Are either one of you thinking of going into ag education, which is a field that we need more teachers in?
Well, we both get that question a lot because I'm actually majoring in agriculture education, but in the leadership and communications track, which is focused on communications courses, but then also giving you taking classes that give you a broader aspect and education level of all the different facets of agriculture. So I've been encouraged many times to go down that teacher track, but it's definitely a need, and I think that it's a fit for students that they should pursue that, whether they study at the University of Minnesota or other universities like River Falls in Wisconsin or South Dakota State University. And hopefully other programs start, like at SMSU. We would love to see that happen.
Yes, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out, I talked to Chancellor Woods in the University of Minnesota, Kirkston, and we did have that ag education program. It was removed, and he along with Dr. Westrom, are working on renewing that. So we would have a program in northern Minnesota, which really helps our students in that area that don't wish to come to the metropolitan area. Many of them end up going to NDSU and migrating to North Dakota, and we're kind of hoping they'd stay in Minnesota and teach in Minnesota. So I was very encouraged to hear that they are going to renew that. So thank
good,
you.
Good. Representative Norness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was kind of the line of comments that I was going to make, too, because I visited with an advisor today that went through the program at Crookston, and she said she wouldn't be in that field today if it wasn't for that convenient opportunity, because the Twin City campus wasn't an option because she lived on a farm, worked on a farm, all of these things, and she had to be close to the farm in order to continue her education. So hopefully that can happen. Right now the university is about the only place in Minnesota, the Minneapolis campus, for that kind of an education, and we need to expand and broaden that a little bit.
Absolutely. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the young ladies that are really supporting FFA and agriculture and are kind of leaders in the peers of your people younger than you especially. What would you tell those that hadn't really considered agriculture as a field or agriculture as something to go into? And the reason why I ask that question is that the agricultural industry is a very far-reaching industry and is one that is just not about being out in the dirt farming, but all the other aspects of the agribusiness. And so there's great opportunities for people to be involved with that. What do you tell people who wonder why you're in ag and why you're in FFA and why should they join FFA?
Well, I would have to, just like what you were saying, how it's not all about being in the dirt anymore, and that you kind of have to tell them that it's not maybe the stereotype that they may have to be involved in agriculture, that it is really far-reaching and there's so many opportunities, and it's constantly growing. And also with all the job opportunities that they are, if you decide to major in agriculture or you want to go for a career in agriculture, it's a certainty that you will have a job. And that's something that a lot of graduating college students may worry about in other fields, having a job or not. But if you go with agriculture, it's almost certain that you will have a job because of all those opportunities and different fields. And there's just so many different branches of it. And I guess that's really how you can tell members to join FFA as well, getting young students to start early, maybe take an agriculture education program, because there's so many different types that are developing now. They're not just a certain few different types of agricultural education programs. They're all different along all different areas, and they're branching out to maybe encompass business and encompass more science. And so it can really apply to any student, and that can spark their interest and maybe get them involved in FFA, which also has so many different focus areas for anyone to become involved and maybe spark their interest for agriculture then. So that's really the way to get them convinced, is just that there's so many opportunities and that you're setting us a place for your future if you decide to get involved in agriculture.
Very good. Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank my colleagues who talked about agricultural education, and those of you who have been working on it a long time. Representative Keel, that's wonderful news. Thank you for working with Crookston. I think you're right on with doing that. I just wanted to mention that this is a issue important where I live, too, at South Central College in North Mankato. They do have an ag education program, and it's a 2+2 program, so it's another option, and I believe they do that at Riverland as well, and I think we need to support those programs. And I will give a shameless plug right now. In the bonding proposal is a proposal from South Central College to improve their labs, and those labs would be used by ag educators to make sure that they're working off of modern labs as they prepare in agriculture and in ag education. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And thank you to the young ladies ahead of us. Thank you. Bright futures for you, and we're so proud of you. So, and I know you have other members in the audience today that are wearing the blue jackets, and we appreciate that you've brought this great number of students forward today. And I also understand that at least a couple of the Dairy Princesses are FFA members as well. So, you know, it does overlap. So thank you very much. And we'll see you later on the floor. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Anderson, we have an informational hearing on House File 3019. And go ahead when you're ready.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members, for allowing us this hearing. And just a bit of background on this bill. It's informational only. I had a preferable bill that granted a sales tax exemption to the purchase of propane tanks. That was heard in the Tax Committee. It's also in the Senate. They've both been laid over for possible inclusion. But I was told after the Tax Committee meeting that they didn't look especially kindly on bills such as that actually are an expense to the Tax Committee, and if I wanted to incentivize the industry, I should actually put a bill in to grant actual dollars. So this is the result of that. I got the bill submitted a week before deadline, but was told by the Energy Committee Chair that they had an earlier deadline of a week because they had so many bills in. So I didn't get a hearing in the Energy Policy Committee. So that's the reason that I guess I'm behind the eight ball on this bill. But I also checked with the Department of Ag about getting some agri funds to incentivize the installation of larger tanks, and found out that didn't work last night either. So we're back with a sales tax exemption. But this bill also, just to me, emphasizes the point that we need to increase the storage capability of propane in the state. It's really an important issue to me, and I'm concerned that as the weather warms up and we're getting rain outside and they're talking 60 degrees on Sunday, that we may forget about what happened this past winter. And we certainly don't want that to happen again in terms of the huge price run up for all of our people in the state as well as actual supply shortages, which caused some real consternation in terms of livestock, barns, home heating, things like that. We don't want to have that happen again. And as I was doing some research on this, Madam Chair and members, Colby helped me out here. And thanks to Colby, actually back in 2011, the same issue came up again. And the state commissioned a study, $40,000 from the LP gas account under the Minnesota statutes. They came up with a study and talked about some of the same things we're hearing today in terms of needing more storage to meet these peak demand times, which is usually in the fall and winter for LP gas, propane gas, and also anhydrous was part of that study as well. But so these issues go back a number of years, and even back in the study back in 2011, they talked about this perfect storm that could happen, and we certainly agree that that happened this past winter with the late wet corn harvest and the brutally cold winter we had that began back in December and really didn't let up until this morning in terms of colder than normal weather. But so that's the background of the bill. I want to thank all of you for coming today to hear about this and to have a testifier to also talk about the bill a little bit, so bear with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having me. My name is Matt Hughes. I'm the Minnesota Managing Director for Cooperative Network. As a reminder, Cooperative Network is a two-state association of co-op businesses of various types in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Minnesota, as you know, is the number one co-op state in the nation, and we also have many co-ops, as you know, that are in the propane business. We support, thanks for letting me testify, by the way, on House File 3019. We support the bill in concept and have talked with Representative Anderson about potentially addressing at least one thing in the bill, but we do support it as an effort to move forward in all the stages of propane supply to address the situation, which I won't go into as Representative Anderson has already, and you're all very aware of the propane shortage issue that we have had happen to us this year. Cooperative Network's been working throughout the whole situation on this issue, and a lot's been done, and we do want to continue to express our gratitude to everyone involved regarding the hours of service relief and the LIHEAP money as well at the beginning of session. So we do support the bill in concept as one of the stages of supply chain. Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's all I have really at the moment.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifier? Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Anderson, for taking the lead on this. I think you may have noticed I signed on to the sales tax bill, and I think you're on to something important. Last night at the Corn Growers event, I met with a Nicollet County farmer who had excess propane in his tank and offered to share it or to sell it during the peak period, and did not he was unable to pull that off. And I was wondering if you were looking at that challenge, and that would relate to this, it seems, that because if there were a crisis, one would expect that there would be some resale of propane or sharing of propane to make sure all had access. Have you wrestled with that issue as well, or can you inform us about that?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, yeah, that's a good point. And I thought we could work on that area as well, but I've also talked to folks like you have, and the problem with that is you can pump the gas into the tank pretty rapidly, but it takes a lot longer to pump it back out again. Unless you have a special truck with a second pump on it to draw it out quicker, it could take a couple of hours to fill a bobtail truck again, the way most tanks are set up. So it is being done in some locations, but it would take probably a special truck with another larger pump to facilitate drawing it back out of the tank quicker. And as farmers put in bigger tanks with their bigger corn dryers, that is something I think we should look at or could look at, but there'd have to be better equipment in terms of pumping it out of the tanks again faster.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Anderson. Another issue that was brought up at the table was another one of my neighbors has purchased a tank, a large one, and he hadn't quite figured out how to get it up here from, I believe, Louisiana, and there were some regulations that he was wrestling with. Have you looked at that issue? Because I think this would stimulate the purchase of larger tanks. That's the idea. And then the transport of that. You know, I sit on transportation finance, so that becomes an issue over there to some degree. Any wisdom on that?
I'll tag team that off to you on that area. I have not looked into that. And kind of a sidelight on that, with the demand, there is a big demand for tanks, and I'm told that the price is going up. But a used tank today is, in a general sense, worth more than a new tank, because if you can find a used tank and get it right away, you can, or in terms of before next season. But to purchase new tanks, you're looking at possibly next fall or later, because there's a demand for tanks, especially these the big, larger tanks for the primary storage. So there is also an issue in just getting more tanks in place by next fall.
Hmm. Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. I know that you know, we are extremely concerned about this issue, and last November, November 4th, I sent a letter to the governor warning of this was going to take place. And you know, just like you're talking about, if we don't address the transportation piece of this or the storage piece of this, we're going to have the same issue come next year. I'm afraid of it with that pipeline that's being converted and whatnot. Going back to the tanks, do you have an idea as far as the dollar amounts that we're looking at as far as the purchase one of those tanks? Do you have that information? I don't mean to put you on.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Representative Hamilton, I do, but the information I have goes back a month or so, and I'm told prices are rising as we speak. But at the time, beginning a session, I talked to folks back home. In a typical tank for a small dryer, I have a small dryer set up, a 1,000-gallon tank. The cost of that tank was about $2,000, about $2 for each gallon of storage. And some of the bigger farmers were looking at putting up 18,000-gallon tanks to hold an entire transport load of LP gas at a time. And that tank, of course, would require the cement piers and such to hold them up. And just the tank at that time was about $60,000 to $70,000. So we're talking serious money here for these tanks.
Thank you. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a conversation with people in the propane industry over the last couple of weeks, and they said they had 21 million gallons of storage capacity throughout the pipeline system would cost about $75 million. So your $3 per gallon is pretty close. So anyway, what I did want to ask you about, a lot of people don't realize this, but there's an awful lot of off-peak natural gas in the XL trade center, trade territory. For example, the Mall of America has interruptible natural gas. So when it gets 30 below, they turn off the natural gas, and guess what they use instead? It's propane. So just when the supplies of propane are going down the sharpest, all of a sudden they suck off a truckload a day, and that's just one facility, and there are a lot of facilities across the state that are using that. It's fantastically cheap natural gas for them when they're using natural gas because they can interrupt it, but then all of the propane users across the state get stuck paying a higher price because of it, because just when we need the propane, all of a sudden it's gone. And so my question is, can this be used for like the Mall of America to add more storage capacity? And my idea was, and I've had conversation with this, and we've taken it out of all of the bills, but my idea was to force them to have 7 days of storage capacity. Most cold spells last less than that. They save a tremendous amount of money by being able to buy off peak. And so if they had 7 days storage capacity, the draw is going down, and you'd get through the cold spell by the time it starts coming back up, before they'd have to start pulling out of the system. And so could they use this program to help pay for additional storage tanks at places like that? Or is it only individuals?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Faust, this program, even the sales tax bill I have, would allow any purchase of a propane tank by retail, residential, or commercial to utilize exactly what you're saying to increase storage, to make it through those peak demand times when the supply is down. Yeah, good point to that.
Right. Thank you.
I have a couple of handouts. We've mentioned the pipeline situation, and we've heard at length about the Cochin pipeline, and Are the handouts handed out?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We
Thank
do
you.
Have them. Thanks.
Yeah, that pipeline that runs through my part of the woods in Benson also goes on down through Iowa and into Illinois, and that is being reversed and will no longer be giving us propane. It's going to be sending drilling material back up to Canada, so we lose that very important source of propane for our area. So again, I think the addition of more transport storage and also rail capabilities are going to be extremely important, and that is being done to a degree, but I envisioned if everybody doubled the size of their tank, we'd double our capacity in the state and would help again smooth out those huge demand curves which happen late fall, early winter. Other things we've talked about also in terms of rearranging the budgeting cycle of the LIHEAP program to get those tanks filled in the summertime when the supply is higher, prices aren't usually lower. So there's things we can do, and we'll keep working on this and try to come up with the things that work to help us, as Representative Hamilton said, of not having this happen again in Minnesota, because it probably will if we don't learn from this and do something. And I would just add also that this may not happen every year. We may not have these really cold winters. And a couple of years ago, we took dry corn out of the field. So I think the consensus is there that we need to increase our storage, but it's going to be a cost to anybody who does that, and it's a cost that may not pay off every year, in that it won't be maybe needed every year. But it's something we all can do to help the entire system and help the state avert this kind of a crisis again. So that's why I think the state can play a part in incentivizing this. And there was a federal program that ended back in the early 2000s that did grant money to people that put in bigger tanks, and that worked, but that federal grant program is gone. This study also mentioned the state could play a role in that, and that's what we're trying to do here, to incentivize more storage capacity in Minnesota. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned rail, and it was announced last week that in Baudette, up in Lake of the Woods County, we are right on the CN railroad line that goes on the south side of Lake of the Woods. And they generally take about 30 rail cars of propane on that siding, that existing siding that's kind of grandfathered in. They just signed a contract with Heartland out of Wisconsin to they're going to put about $500,000 into an upgraded storage, or excuse me, an upgrading unloading facility there, where they can load two trucks at a time, and they're going from 30 rail cars to 300, which will take up, I think it's about 93 million gallons of propane. And they're going to serve an area about 200 miles radius from Baudette. And with conversations with the gal, they said there were many other places on railroad lines that are looking to do kind of the same thing. I had the House research figure out, well, how much of a percentage is that of the 40% we're going to be missing? And their research best guess was like 7% of it. So that, I mean, that's a nice step in the right direction, and there are other places looking to start the rail line, you know, coming from, you know, Canada, where, you know, with propane. So I thought that was fairly good news on that part, and just thought I would share it.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Along those same lines, Representative Erickson, I just happen to have these numbers here. Minnesota is part of what's called the North Central PAD, that's petroleum districts in the nation. And in Minnesota, in terms of rail terminals, we have one at Springfield, there's one in Glenwood, Invergrove Heights, Rosemount, Mentor, and a place called Twig, and also at Pipestone. And the one at Mentor, I think, is the only underground storage we have in the state. And by these figures, the storage at Mentor is about 337,000 gallons there. Nationally, the two biggest storage areas are in Bellevue, Texas, and in Conway, Kansas. That's where a lot of our trucks had to go this past winter to pick up additional supply. The Bellevue, Texas one, I believe both of those are underground salt caverns that have been pressurized, and they hold tremendous sums of propane. And to help us out, they actually reverse some pipelines that usually go north to south, and they reversed those this winter when the president saw the need here, and they actually came back up south to north to bring up some of that southern propane to help us out here in the middle part of the nation. So, again, anything we can do to increase that. Glenwood, where I'm from, CHS is going to put in, I believe it's 15 90,000-gallon tanks to somehow try to make up this loss of pipeline capacity. As you mentioned, the Cochin pipeline was about 40% of our state's total capacity of propane, and that's going to be, or that has disappeared. So we have to make it up some other way and do all we can. So thanks again.
And I have a question for Mr. Hughes. You had said you understand and you appreciate the concept.
Yep.
And you're kind of clear to use that term. And I'm just wondering, did you have other suggestions or thoughts about what the co-ops, for instance, would be interested in having in
Madam
place?
Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the question. The basic thing at this point is making sure we look at it a little bit more. But that's why I mean we support it in concept a great deal. And as a matter of fact, the one thing we're looking at potentially right now, I talked to Representative Anderson about, is the 100 gallons and putting that up to perhaps something more along the lines of 250 or a little higher, like the other bill that we've been supportive of, the sales tax exemption bill.
All right.
So it's simply a little more study, but also that one in particular is
okay. Representative Anderson.
And I don't know, in an informational hearing, can you make oral amendments or to change that number, or is it just kind of
We don't have the technically we're not having the bill heard, I guess. Representative Teal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just, when we were listening to the list of places, Mentor happens to be in my district, and very, very tiny, small, little town, a lake resort area, which is kind of unusual in my district. Yes, it's a unique underground storage, naturally holds the propane there, and it's just kind of an interesting area. I don't know where Twig is. I have a trail, but I hadn't heard of Twig. But it is a, that was my wonder, too, was could we expand some storage in that area, possibly, to provide for citizens. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't mean to drag us out. I believe Twig is in the Duluth area. Maybe Representative Dill would know where that's at. But this last winter in January, the rail terminal in Twig had ordered 72 rail cars that were supposed to show up in January, and only 16 showed up. And so, which I think enforces what Representative Anderson is trying to do, that unfortunately that has become a very unreliable source of propane delivery for us. And so we've got to figure out other solutions, because unfortunately that one isn't always working right. Mm.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Just one final thing in conclusion, Madam Chair, and thank you for the time. Again, I'm going to quote from this 2011 summary that was done on the situation. One of its conclusions says, plan ahead, and when the need for product is imminent, have storage containers filled to capacity in advance of the start of the season. The industry could consider offering customer incentives for filling storage tanks in advance of the fall season to reduce the occurrence of bottlenecks during peak demand. And that's what we want to try to do. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you for the presentation today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
With nothing further before the committee, we will adjourn.